109 in the sky, but the pigs won't quit. You're here with me, Dr. Death Defy. I'll be your surgeon, your proctor, your helicopter, pumping out the slaughtermatic sounds to keep you alive. So, no, I can keep going, but I won't.
Take three. Welcome back to the Grim Reader podcast. This is one of our book club episodes. So if you didn't know, we were, of course, going to be talking about Sally Rooney's Beautiful World, Where Are You? So if you've been waiting for this episode, here it is.
If you've you been didn't waiting, ask blame us, me. If you've been ages to get to this.
No. If you haven't been waiting, well, you just have to listen anyway. So tough.
As if you were going to avoid this book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel sorry for the people that, now I don't, we'll get to this. I don't think there's a rational reason to ever dislike Sally Rooney because she's just objectively brilliant. But
we'll get
hate,
to it. That is the niche of this episode.
We'll get to it.
I'm there.
So, okay, let's introduce ourselves. I'm Rebecca.
And then that's it. It's just Rebecca. I'm Chloe.
It's just Rebecca with two other voices here.
It's Michael.
Yeah.
Oh, can we do that again?
Okay. Oh my God. Okay. We're going to try and introduce ourselves again. There's been many takes of like different things so far in this episode and we're like 3 minutes in. So I'm Rebecca.
Hi,
I'm Chloe. Reverse alphabetical order.
Okay.
Reverse. Yeah, I get that what that means.
Take three of introducing ourselves. I'm Rebecca.
I'm Nikki.
And I'm Chloe.
I'm so proud of us.
There's a big pause after Chloe because we were like, did we do it right?
We did. So, yeah. Will we do a little plot summary of Beautiful World, Where Are You? I'm just going to read off from the blurb. So, Alice, a novelist, meets Felix, who works in a warehouse, and asks him if he'd like to travel to Rome with her. In Dublin, her best friend Eileen is getting over a breakup and slips back into flirting with Simon, a man she has known since childhood. Alex, Felix, Eileen, and Simon are still young, but life is catching up with them. They desire each other, they delude each other, they worry about sex and friendship and the world they live in. Are they standing in the last lighted room before the darkness, bearing witness to something? Will they find a way to believe in a beautiful world? So, do we think that the blurb is accurate for what happens in the book?
I think it is pretty accurate. I think that's as good an overview as you can give to something that's not that plot driven.
Yeah.
I think so, up to the point where they start talking about, like, are they standing in the last lighted room before the darkness? I get why that's there because of the conversations that Eileen and Alice have in the book, but...
Yeah, we'll come to that.
But I don't know. I think when I even read that in the blurb, I was like, that's strange. Are we going to have like existential crisis going on? And then after reading it, I was like, yeah, if I had written that blurb, which I'm not great at blurbs or even like talking, because look at me, I'm rambling on now. I was like, that's the one bit I would cut out myself.
It's weird.
No, I think that's fair.
Yeah. And I don't even think it's because of the line. I think it's because the way the rest of that blurb is written is very like, Alice meets Felix, who works in a warehouse. Alice and Felix and Simon, life is catching up with them. And then all of a sudden you get like this really heavy, like
like
kind of metaphorical.
The world is dying.
Line.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like, I'm deep. It is. It's like someone coming up to you being like, hi, I'm Rebecca. I'm deep.
Like, are we the last to bear witness to something real?
I just...
Imagine if that was the way we spoke on the podcast, first of all.
My God, we should have introduced ourselves like that. Damn it.
This is an esoteric literature podcast.
It's a strange one. And
it's like, you know, it's not like this at all. It's like, do you know when, the Katya and Trixie thing, and it's like, yes. Hi, I'm the rash that you can't figure out, Trixie Mattel.
Yeah. A little bit like that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Can we also preface this that we are Sally Rooney fans?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
For anything that we say in this, this is our own opinion. So, because I know that people get very angry when people might question Sally Rooney or like
yeah, I think
have
that's
a few
important.
Criticisms. And I think it's very important to say this is our personal opinions here. We haven't even discussed the book before this because we all wanted to be like, I don't know, I wanted to find out like on the podcast what you thought.
Save it for the fans.
Save it for the fans. But as well, you know, we might disagree with one another. Who knows? Mm-hmm. And I respect
their opinion. Will a fight break
opinion.
Out? Are we the last to bear witness to this friendship?
I respect their opinions. And, you know, I'm not going to get angry about them. So,
yeah, we are Sally Rooney fans. We are not Sally Rooney stans. I think that is the important difference.
You know,
yeah, that's well worded. More well worded than the blurb, we could say.
But what is the first thing you want to talk about with the book? Should we talk about the structure of it, really? Because
that's something that's come under fire.
Do you know what? I'm gonna push the ball out and I'm gonna say I like the structure. The only problem I have with the structure is that I like certain characters more than others, and I do get the urge to skip the pages, but I didn't because I'm a good person. But I don't understand why people are so annoyed about the structure. I think I like going from email. This is this. This is an email. This is this. This is an
email.
That's
the thing. There's nothing wrong with the structure. It's the contents of the email.
That's the thing. I actually quite liked having the emails there as kind of a little bit of a broken up thing. What I would have loved is that they put in like Dear Eileen or To Eileen, because I was like,
the same person.
Can you just like, but I think we should talk about the contents of the emails, because I think that's more what's grating people rather than having the emails in there, because I thought they were quite refreshing at times. So we're going to talk about the emails, because I say some reviews on Bookstagram, which we have recently joined after having the podcast for like almost a year. But some of them, like, they really ripped into there being emails at all. And
that's not the problem. I
don't think
that's
such
a lovely aside in a character driven book. Like, I'm getting more of who they are as people and the nature of what their friendship is.
Exactly, because that's so integral to the book, is this friendship between Alice and Eileen.
Yeah.
And I mean, especially when they're living at opposite sides of the country, this is the only way for them to communicate with one another.
And like, I think it is unusual that, like, obviously, like, there's Eileen is using Messenger and she's Facebook stalking her ex-boyfriend, but she's choosing to like use email, which is a pretty archaic way of communicating with your pals.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, it's probably like it's the medium that kind of works with them, because they don't check in with each other every day. That's not their relationship. It has to be email.
That's the thing about their friendship as well. Like, it's I don't know how much of an authentic friendship it is, and how much they're just each other's mirror and sounding board for their esoteric thoughts.
Yeah. Now, I had that opinion for all of the book, and at the point, like, we'll probably talk about this point in detail, but at the point where they meet, that was the only point where I actually felt like that they liked each other.
Yeah, exactly. That there was actual real human connection there.
But there's a line in that then when she's saying that, like, they're both kind of, it's almost like they're blaming, they're both kind of a little bit wounded that the other is kind of being a bad friend, and neither of them is like opening to that. And then it all kind of went away then when they saw each other, but then it was kind of like it all came back. Their emails are just really distant. And
yeah, well, I mean, the actual topics they discuss, like, yes, there are some great points that, like, I'll get to, but, like, I'm sorry, the stuff about the Bronze Age, political parties, you know, really interested in like right-wing politics, all like the existential stuff. I like the Bronze Age stuff. I was I was really struggling to keep my eyes open.
I didn't think I was going to get through the book, to be honest. The first quarter of the book, I was really close to giving up, especially all the talk of Marxism. I was like, this is so inorganic.
I know.
You're pushing a square peg into a round hole or whatever the saying is, like, it, yeah. I was like, I get it and I agree with you, but like, oh, it's really forced.
I know, it so was. And like, I think as well, like, what bothered me more than the content of the emails was the relationship between the emails, because like, oh Jesus, like Alice would be going on about one thing and then Eileen acknowledges what Alice went on about for like 8 pages in like one sentence and then proceeds to go on about something completely else for 8 pages.
That's actually something that I did that irked me as I went through. I was like, these emails don't feel authentic at all. Like, it's like, let me acknowledge so everything you've said, blah 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 blah, and it's like, now I'm going to go on and talk about what I really wanted to talk to you about,
and then they ask the polite questions to each other at the very end and then they sign off.
I was like, oh, by the way, how is your mother?
Or like, how are you? They never really ask that. I'm like, that's one of the first things I ask friends if I message them, is like, how are you? Blah, blah, blah. Like, I've just, oh, it was
strange. How are you? I love you. I miss you so much.
They are each other's private Twitter accounts.
That's it.
I cracked it, Sally Rooney. I see what you were going for.
It's very true.
That's very true. Whoa.
Can I say though, even that's though there was a lot of boring kind of topics or like just stuff that like was too far out there in the emails, I will say that a lot of the emails do contain like interesting stuff, such as like them talking about like motherhood, celebrities, fame.
So the celebrity bit kind of like really was my favorite element of this book, because I was like, I don't know, it was just the way she worded it. I haven't been able to stop thinking about it. Like, how weird is it that we live and we're all kind of bred to think that, like, oh my God, the epitome of being a person is when everyone writes articles about you going to the shop. That's normal behavior. Mm-hmm. And that's what you should want for yourself. And like
putting people on a pedestal is very cool, actually.
I actually have the quote here because I tabbed it. So this is where she's like, this comes up multiple references in the book to like celebrity, being a famous author, kind of having that kind of worldwide known name.
We'll talk later about how it's totally autobiographical. But anyway.
But here it is. So, I'll go from where she kind of talks about herself. So when I submitted the first book, I just wanted to make enough money to finish the next one. I never advertised myself as a psychologically robust person capable of withstanding extensive public inquiries into my personality and upbringing. People who intentionally become famous, I mean people who, after a little taste of fame, want more and more of it, are, and I honestly believe this, deeply psychologically ill. The fact that we are exposed to these people everywhere in our culture, as if they are not only normal but attractive and enviable, indicates the extent of our disfiguring social disease. There is something wrong with them, and when we look at them and learn from them, something goes wrong with us. Like,
it's the disfiguring social disease. That's the one that I was like, oh, that's what it is. This whole like influencer celebrity, it's a social disease. It's so bizarre when you actually get down.
When you take a step back, you're like, it becomes profoundly weird. Like, I don't know, I had this passing thought, like, I was like, what would happen if this podcast became like My Favorite Murder? And I was like, I would actually, like, I would hibernate, I would go underground, like, I wouldn't be able to cope with that. And I know that any level of recognition makes me feel ill.
And like, they took My Favorite Murder took a 3-month break this summer, and the criticism. The abuse. It's like, hello, they're giving you free content. Fuck off.
Just being famous seems like the actual worst thing in the world. And like, people get really annoyed at people who shy away from the public eye. Like Sally Rooney, like, look, we all know this is very much based in her own experience. Like, she never wanted to be famous. And then people are like, well, why does she keep writing books then? Like, you know, if she doesn't want to be in the public eye, why does she keep putting herself out there? She doesn't.
No,
like,
she
and
doesn't
writers
at all.
In particular, like, you know, it's a very solitary experience. And like often very solitary people, like, you know, get into writing, and it's, people get so odd when you don't want to accept your fame, and that's really, really messed up.
Yeah, and like the way normal people went for her is, it was so anti, it's so anti her. Like she just lost control of her lack of a better word. Like, sorry, like that book, like Normal People, was one of her, like that was a child of hers, you know. She made that and led it into the world, and it totally got eaten by the Kardashians and spit out the other end, and it's just a cash cow now. And like, fair dues, you know, it's launched, it's done great things for Ireland. The one thing I won't forgive is that GAA is not that romantic. It is fucking disgusting and dirty and violent and great crack. But like, hello, like, oh my God.
Like Gucci released like Ga shorts and Shane's O'Neal. It was
O'Neal. She released O'Neal's shorts to look like.
Oh my God.
Like, that is so, like, it kind of, reading this book made me really feel for her.
Yeah.
Because the first thing I felt for her when this came out was, oh my God, the pressure she must be under to be writing
for someone who has clearly always been a very quiet person, who has not, you know, like brought publicity onto herself.
And for someone
that must be so hard
to be a Marxist and have to watch Gucci rip off O'Neill's.
Yeah, and to see your book become like a monolith, and like, you know, these pop-up bookshops for just this one book alone everywhere, you're like plastered on billboards. It must be, I can't imagine how you process that.
No, and I've been having this conversation with music for an awful long time, because I just think the way the music industry is based is it's not actually possible to work as a performer without a day job. Unless you're the Billie Eilish, because Billie Eilish is pumped to every single person in the world. Every single person, regardless of their musical taste, has an opinion on Billie Eilish. And because everyone is so, like, she's getting all the playtime, the local musicians in the city and the people who have the degrees in music and put their life in music can't work in music full time. And then Billie at the other end of the spectrum is getting the world's abuse for absolutely anything she does. And the same thing's happened. It's just sad, because I kind of wanted to think that was just, oh, we'll fix this problem because that's just the music industry. But no, like watching what Sally went through, it's everything ever. And it's this whole, like, it's so Americanized.
The publicity machine. Like,
oh, it's painful. Poor Sally.
Yeah. And the default isn't keeping your private life private. Like, that you have to go to lengths to do that. Sorry, what were you saying, Rebecca?
No, I was just saying, like, that, I mean, it does, especially how often it comes up, you can kind of see how fatigued she is. Now, this is us assuming, like, a lot of books that we read, or even listening to a lot of authors on podcasts, that they do give out that a lot of people assume everything is autobiographical. But when Sally Rooney is talking about this, you do have to think that this is her telling her story a little bit.
When she's saying in interviews as well that, you know, this isn't what she wants, like,
exactly.
That is.
Exactly. And I mean, we're not saying that Sally is Alice, like, their personalities are probably completely different. But I mean, the fact that this comes up as like a repeated thing that Alice thinks about constantly, of even later on in the book, when she discusses, like, that she doesn't think she'd be able to write again, do you know? And
I've had two good ideas in my life.
Like, yeah, oh, and she says things like this, and you're just like, imagine feeling so exasperated and burnt out by, you know, probably being hounded at different events and things like that. I mean, it's just horrific. And
it is. And isn't it? I don't know. I just had this thought that it really is something out of, like, It's what's the word? The really pretentious one. Orwellian. How Orwellian.
We live in a society.
This book with Alice giving out about exactly like this publication machine that Chloe calls it. This is exactly what the book is about, giving out about that, and that's exactly what happened to it on its launch.
And yeah, it's like, kind of cruel.
Faber, no issue with that. Yeah, we're gonna let all of them make up pop-up bookshops, even though that is clearly not what Sally wants.
Almost as if capitalism doesn't work.
It's just kind of, when I saw the pop-up shops, I was like, because I'd finished the book by then, I was like, oh no.
Oh, I was sad for her.
I was like this, especially when they were saying like, oh, it also features like some of Sally's favorite things. I was like, I highly doubt it does.
And then I was reading, when I was prepping for this episode, I was reading like just a review on it to see what the consensus was. Mm. And one of the reviews was like, oh, like I didn't get a Sally Rooney bucket hat. So like, I'm like looking on Depop for one now. And I was like, this is so fucked.
It's just become a brand. She is a brand now.
But it's not, I mean, I'm very new to like reading the Sally Rooney books, because if you haven't listened to an episode before, I did talk about very early on, a friend of mine told me not to read her because they didn't like normal people. I have since read Conversations with Friends. This is my second book. And I mean, immediately after reading Conversations with Friends, I say, this is an experience. I can completely see why she is so loved, like her books are just I can see why they're so hyped up. And then coming up to the launch of this, I felt really uncomfortable. I was like, it should be about the book rather than all the kind of merchandise going along with
it. This like cult of personality, I was saying, from someone who doesn't want to be a cult of personality.
Do you know, it really just like jars with me that you're just like,
she's just trying to write.
Leave the woman write.
Oh, it's horrible.
So yeah, so I mean, I think that was probably one of the most interesting, if not the most interesting part of the book for me.
Yeah,
I agree. Those sections and amazing. The way they're written is just, oh, they pack a punch. So they do.
They really, really do.
They really do.
Actually, something I wanted to bring up with you is a lot of people are comparing this. We've all read Conversations with Friends now. Yes. So a lot of people are comparing this to Conversations with Friends. And I was wondering what you think of that.
Oh, I have an opinion on this.
Cool, because so do I.
I think this book, to me, there are similarities, but I think the difference is like maturity. I think that was how I spotted them. I was like, oh my God, this feels like, this could have been the way Conversations with Friends kind of operated if they were 10 years older.
Exactly.
If they were however many years older. This is a very kind of, this is more similar to Conversations with Friends than Normal People, I feel.
For sure.
100%.
I also, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's just the maturity is like the shining beacon of difference. And I love that they both exist.
That's the thing. And like, she's matured as a writer so much, and even look, I'm a Conversations with Friends big fan. I loved that book so much. But I think the thing that works about this book so much is Felix. I think Felix is kind of the unsung hero of this book, not because he's a great character or because he's likable or anything, but he is a foil to all the pretentiousness.
That's so true.
He works as a foil, not as a likable character.
I literally wrote down like Felix and like discuss how much you don't like him.
Oh, I do not like the guy.
The bit with Felix that like made me kind of like pick up the book and then want to put it down and pick it up, and like I was so confused, was that chapter when they're lying in bed together and he kind of starts slating her, basically.
It's horrible. It's so
and
hard.
And then
to read.
When he kind of gives the reason, he's like, "You're putting, like, you have to be the bigger person." And he's like, I'm never going to say those things to you again because I don't want to say those things." But he was like, "I had to say them to see how you'd react, and you reacted exactly how I thought you would."
Big That's Swedish sadist vibes.
It's a huge red flags with Felix a lot of the way through, like how he treats Alice. Alice is, and Felix kind of start not really going out, but like hanging out together and sleeping together and stuff like that. And huge red flags, like how he treats her, how he talks to her. He undermines her a lot, makes her
he just wants to see, he wants to test, he thinks she's impermeable and he's testing that all the time, and she's like, no, I'm sensitive, please.
Yeah, and I mean, he doesn't listen at all. And then I mean, it really from like when I finished it, and they, sorry, spoilers, we should have said that at the start of the podcast.
If you came here for
sorry,
anything they end else, up, no.
They're still together at the end, and I was really disappointed because I was like, this felt like the start of a very abusive relationship,
yeah,
verbally abusive, and I was I really kind of hated that. And another thing, sorry, another thing that was another huge red flag for me was when they were talking about their own flaws and like that they're not good people, that they have done really bad things in their past. Mm. And Alice kind of talks about how she bullied someone in school, and then Felix was like, well, I had unprotected sex with an underage girl when he was 17 and she got pregnant, and he was like, I told her that she'd be fine. And like his whole conversation about it was how he like coerced her into it. And I felt very sick reading it. And it made me very uncomfortable. And that happens like a third of the way into the book. So like anytime Felix popped up after that, I just viewed him as this terrible person that I was like,
I didn't.
Really liked that part.
Yeah, I loved that part because I think it was there, it was the fact that he could see exactly what he had done wrong.
Mm-hmm. And I do like
he
that.
Could
yeah.
He could admit exactly what happened. And he says, like, you know, because she's kind of saying, oh, you know, like, is that your fault? And he was like, I coerced her. I did that. And he's broken over it. And mm-hmm. I think we're looking at a character who's still acting badly at times. But I think he's, like, it's, I think it's done so well by Sally, because I think every action from that point forwards, it eventually makes sense. Like that bit where he is like provoking her and trying to get a reaction. I can like while reading it, I was like, what the fuck? This guy's an ass. And then after he kind of reasoned with why he did it, it's not that he's saying he did it for a reason that was good or a reason that was right, but you can see why it happened. Everything kind of feels like a butterfly effect with him. I just think he's a really like real character. Like,
yeah, he's an excellently like fleshed out character.
Like he's like an example of like some of the best writing.
I think Felix like is seen, he's so well written as well, because he's seen as like the simplest one of them. He lives simply, like, you know, he works in a warehouse. I think there's this element of him being a bit below the others.
Yeah, 100%.
And is such a complex character. And I think that's why he is such a great foil, that like he's not the highfalutin like Trinity literature graduate or working for like a left-wing think tank. He's like, he's a normal working class guy, and that's so removed from anything the rest of them are familiar with.
Yeah.
And he's still just as complex and as intelligent as the others.
Yeah. And he's wounded by, I think there's that assumption through the whole book that there's a power difference, and that makes sense. Well, not, it doesn't justify, totally doesn't justify,
but it does add up
why he speaks to Alice the way he does. And
he wants to bring her back down to earth because he thinks that she's so much better than him.
Yeah, and he kind of, I think in that chapter when he is like abusive to her, when they're in bed, when he is like talking down to her and saying horrible things, it's awful. And it's the bit, she just bows down to it. And then when he says, like, you're bowing down to this so you can be the bigger person, it's not because you're not wounded and you don't feel the need to own up to it or like to kind of stand up for yourself. It's not that you're like a strong person who can go through this. It's that you are purposely putting yourself into a groveling position so that you are the better person here. And
she can't do anything right.
No. Oh, no. God, she can't.
It's like, a horrible relationship. We've talked about Felix quite a lot.
Because he is the best written character in the book.
I think he's the most necessary character that isn't present in the other books.
Yeah.
One hand we have Felix, and the other then you have Simon. Now, I think you can tell from our reactions that we really liked Simon.
Sorry, Simon in the morning. I'd even deal with all the Catholic stuff.
To be honest, I thought it was interesting adding such a strong element of religion throughout the book.
Yeah.
And having someone who's quite young, which is rare in, well, not rare in Ireland, but I mean, the younger population of Ireland wouldn't be devout.
Like, how many people Catholics do you know who are in college and went to mass and yeah, things like
the
that?
Hard, yeah. But I think it's like the hard left religious group.
Yeah.
That's where it's like, that's where the numbers are so scarce in Ireland.
Yeah.
What I liked was how he was portrayed with his religion was that he never forced it on anyone else. Mm. This was for himself.
It was
only
a personal relationship. And like,
I have to say that I have met some people that they will try to force their beliefs on you and tell you that you're wrong if you have different thoughts or things like that. Whereas Simon, even if you question him, and there's moments in the book where Felix does, like, he does not like that Simon is religious, and he takes it on himself to kind of test that.
Yeah, and I mean, Felix, it's when they're on the, is it when they're on the beach, he kind of says something like,
he says a few things, but even when he finds out, like, Felix is bi, and he's like, oh, he's gonna have a problem with me and things like that.
Yeah.
And it's that horrible assumption, do you know? And I mean, the Catholic stance on homosexuality and that is disgusting, and you know, we're not gonna get into it, but I didn't like that. Maybe it's because we'd seen Simon from the very start and how caring he is, and that
he reminds me of a priest, like in his, no, in his acceptance, like, you
Feedback
know, in this
priest.
Yeah,
I think it's the idealized version of a priest.
Yeah, exactly.
What we would hope would be who we would meet at, you know, if we did go to mass, or who would be doing holy communions and things like that.
Like, he's so accepting of everyone and everything. And he's not, like, even when he's challenged by Felix, like, he never ever loses his calm.
No.
Like,
because I mean, I would say that this is just one instance of it. Because I mean, we also get, I mean, Alice and Eileen, they do talk about religion themselves and how it's very calming and more kind of the kind of effect that it has on them. I mean, they're not religious themselves, but it was just a very interesting part of Simon's kind of character.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite emails after they go to Eileen and Simon go to mass together.
Yeah.
I thought that email was just, I just felt like I was actually talking to someone there. I thought she was really real.
Yeah, that, no, that was a really lovely moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. But with Simon, I hated the way Eileen treated him. And
I understood it, but it made me a bit sad.
I understood it, but it just made me so sad because, I mean, I think with Eileen, we meet a person who is terrified of her future because she doesn't know what's going on. She has very low self-esteem. She doesn't understand why anyone would love her. And because Simon doesn't say the words, I love you, she doesn't think he does. And I mean, to anyone with eyes, Jesus, like, the man worships her.
Yeah. And Alice says that so many times because, you know, and she's like, oh, he loves you. And she's like, did he say it? She's like, no, it's so obvious.
Yeah.
I think that happens twice in the book. I just had a thought, by the way, like, Simon and Eileen are basically the older normal people.
Yeah.
That is them almost in a way. I think that's the parallel. And then you can almost, when you put it in that light, I can almost see a bit of a parallel between Nick and Francis in Conversations with Friends. And it's like, is this book like those two books aging?
Yeah.
I have to say, I did prefer having the more mature thoughts going through it. The
decisions made more sense.
They make a lot more sense.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of the things that people have really disliked about the book is that she's moved away from, you know, college era people or, you know, all that. And you're like, well, one, her audience is growing, you know.
Two, like, the woman is 30.
We're growing up and she's 30. Do you know? I mean,
Ben Platt and Dear Evan Hansen. She knows her place.
Yeah, it's one thing that's really kind of irked me a little bit. And I mean, a lot of people being, even when I was looking up just to write some points that reviews being like, oh, Sally Rooney. And it's just like millennial and Gen Zs and all this. And I was like, people older than that can enjoy Sally Rooney.
Absolutely.
You know, I was just like, it's like she's being pigeonholed.
And it's not like she writes about being a person, like being a human being, not about being, because we all kind of go through the phase where like you're 17 and you get the new coin word for why your generation is never going to own a house. And you're like, I'm a millennial. I eat avocado toast, or I'm Gen Z. And like, I have amazing makeup all the time and cool style. And then you cling to it and then you grow out of that and you go, yeah, it's whatever. Like, actually, that is like a massive term for like a massive, like literally like a couple of million.
We all just crave, and that's why labels are so comforting. Like, we crave an identity and a group.
And she writes within and beyond the label. She's not stuck in a label. Like, you couldn't like only read this if you're millennial and relate, or like it's just
a really well written book.
I felt that was almost a little bit of I dig at Sally Rooney seeing those kind of reviews that people, I will say people, what's the word? Not belittle her success, but take offense to it that, you know, I read a review that said, oh, she's only 30 and this is only her third book. And I mean, she's already a worldwide success. And it was so condescending.
Like infantilizing.
Yeah. And I'm like, she is this amazing literary talent and
she's only a woman from Ireland.
I mean, to be fair, like if they'd said that, I would have.
She's just a tiny baby.
It's just really, I think, disrespectful, because I mean, if you're reviewing that, to have that kind of language used, I mean, it's showing no respect for someone who is a colleague of yours, do you know?
Yeah. Always like, well, what's she going to do next? Because like, we haven't even seen the best for work.
Yeah, she's a professional. Her life has been in English and in literature. Just let her work.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the bottom line is leave Sally Rooney alone, mother of God.
Yeah. Leave Sally Rooney alone.
We haven't really talked. We've talked a little bit about Alice and Eileen, our two like protagonists,
I think the reason we haven't gone into them is because, like, Simon is a standalone character. Felix is a standalone character. Alice and Eileen are very, very like entwined for me.
Yeah,
like I think they're so extremely similar.
Well, I mean, even their emails, the fact that you'd be reading it and you could easily think it was Alice or Eileen writing them.
Exactly.
Like you can't tell one from the other until it's like, you just know that it's switched narratives, but you're like...
Well, I think I disagree a tiny bit. I think they're not like total different voices. I do think they're still different though, because I think I kind of viewed Eileen as much more... like naive, but kind of like she's kind of self-placed naive. Like she's kind of put herself as this kind of more innocent person, and I think she is at the bottom line, but then I think Alice has kind of put herself as the a bit more kind of
worldly
kind of serious, and it's kind of, I think it's kind of their perceptions of themselves are what's actually different.
I think Alice is just kind of this more like grandiose character, whether she wants to be or not. Like, and that she's always been the kind of louder, more brash, not brash, that's not the right word, but like, you know, the kind of more
defiant.
Yeah, the bigger personality, I guess, in, to put it kind of cruelly. Like since their college days where like everyone made fun of what she used to wear and everything because she was just so out there. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they've really kind of become comfortable in their roles. And I feel like Eileen just plays kind of more of a supporting role to Alice in their friendship.
Interesting.
I don't know if
talk about their friendship, I had a lot of questions about their friendship throughout the book.
Is it a friendship?
Is it a friendship? Because, Alice has, before the book happens, she has had a mental breakdown and she's been in a facility or hospital for that. And this is her having been released and she is now living by herself in somewhere at some time by the sea. I had a feeling it was like Mayo maybe, but so then I mean the whole way through it, even Eileen, when she questions why Alice starts going on work trips and things like that, you immediately you're like, is this a caring friendship or is this someone demanding to know every single detail about your life and you're not allowed to do something?
It struck me as jealousy.
Yeah, and she's kind of blaming her. She's like, but like you weren't doing well and now you're going away. Like, is that actually good?
It just didn't come across as caring. It really came across as this, I would say jealous, but very controlling sort of friendship that she wasn't allowed to do this without checking in with Eileen first.
Yeah.
And I mean, even referencing that, is this the time for this? Or, you know, are you well enough to do this? What would that have an effect? What kind of effect would that have on Alice reading that from someone? And
especially someone who she does adore, like in whatever way she does.
And I mean, even I think it says quite a lot that Alice didn't tell Eileen herself that she had been had a mental breakdown and had gone into hospital, that it Simon had to tell her. And that was weeks afterwards. Do you know, I think it says a lot. And it's not something that really gets discussed in the book.
No.
But I did. I had a lot of, you know, thoughts on it.
I feel like maybe Alice feels judged by Eileen and that Alice doesn't perceive their relationship at all the same way as Eileen does.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, I do think she feels judged. What do you mean by perceive? Go more there.
Like that, you know, the way I said that, like Eileen kind of sees herself as almost secondary to Alice, and that, like, you know, she's done this, she's won all these like literary awards, but like she hasn't written a book and she hasn't done this, and she's kind of feels a little bit, this is me projecting now very potentially, but that she feels kind of outdone by Alice. And that there's this like little hint of begrudgery there that we see like when Alice goes away on work trips and everything. But I think Alice is almost afraid of Eileen in some ways, and that like she holds back from Eileen sometimes because I think so. Eileen is kind of her glimpse of
what
like morality and what like is would have been the right thing to do.
And I think because they're friends so long, I think what happens sometimes with people like that who are growing apart, it's like they were the best friends in college. They were the best friends and they always got on. So if all of a sudden I feel like I'm not being treated right by them, it's because I'm not doing something right. I kind of feel that way with Alice, whereas it is. I think the problems they have are kind of down to jealousy and insecurity.
Yeah.
But even look at, I mean, when Alice was leaving for these work trips, she even was like, I live in Dublin. Like, you flew out of Dublin and you didn't have time to call on me. And she's like, I was arriving at the airport at like 7 a.m. and like, did you really want to have like a 15-minute chat over coffee?
I see, know? Both sides of it there, because Alice hasn't made room in her life for anyone. It's not just Eileen, like anyone. Yeah. And she's trying to separate herself from that life a lot, I think, as well. Like we get the vibe that she was once very close with Simon as well, like as friends, like when herself and Eileen lived together. But like, she's drifted from everyone.
Yeah. I wonder though, is that because she's doing what's best for herself?
Yeah. And I think very potentially.
I would kind of commend her on that, you know, that maybe she realized Dublin life was not for her. I mean, she seems to really enjoy living in the countryside in this lovely house.
Like for all their verbose emails and everything, like they don't communicate at all in the whole book.
The first time they communicate is when they're actually with each other, and
it's when they have that big massive row.
Yeah, that's the
and
first
to be honest,
time.
That was well overdue because, I mean,
bubbling up to the top.
Yeah, and I mean, I have to say, I thought that Eileen acted very selfishly during that.
It's very hard because I feel like it's so hard because there's like, I feel like I need to pick a side almost when I'm listening to them, but it is that you can just see exactly why both of them acted the way they did. They both have such a clear, again, it's just that butterfly effect thing. Like, you know, it starts with one little issue and it's in like, Alice is scared of talking to her and is insecure in the friendship, and it starts with Eileen being jealous in the friendship, and then the actions just get more and more out of hand, and it's just very hard.
In that sense, I mean, the big thing you can say about their relationship is that they do not talk to one another at all. No. Like those emails, like they don't ask how they are, they don't check in with what's going on.
It's all secondary to their thoughts, their lofty thinking.
I mean, even then, when they do discuss their relationships with Felix and Simon, it's more kind of that gossipy kind of nature to it. And even then, neither of them really know what's going on with the other.
It's just not real. Like the way they communicate, like it makes total sense for them, but like it's not a real
connection. To be honest, it does remind me of Bobby and Frances.
Yeah.
It does. Because I mean, I didn't like their relationship either.
Yeah. I didn't actually think of them as parallel before. There's something very similar. I think Bobby and Frances had a bit more, they could be a bit more open and a bit more emotional and a bit more direct.
They were also a lot younger.
Yeah. How about, can we talk about the ending? Did we like, because that's I think that's the final thing that people have issue with. That's like where all the reviews are pointing is like, what is up with the end?
I don't know whether I liked the ending or not. I think it's, when I compare it to conversations with friends, I have more favorable feelings on it.
It's like, it's a really nice ending.
A nice ending. I will say that finding out that Alex and Felix were still together, I was like,
I actually, my problem with it was I hated that we went into a lockdown moment. I just hated
I know
so
that
much.
Really jarred on me. I hated that actually. I forgot about it.
Oh, and it was, oh God, I actually got like a visceral, like, oh, I don't want to read this. I hate that I read this book. I hate that it got real.
I get you totally. I don't like when lockdown comes up in fiction.
No, I hate, and it just came out like, and I talked about this one when me and Becca did the last episode of Atlantis in the Bailey Summers book, because but it's done in a funny way, but it's still kind of a bit like it was on the edge for me. And then the Sally Rooney went over the edge. In Bailey Summers, Stephen King is kind of like, oh, our characters, he stayed at home writing all day and he enjoyed it. He didn't know that this was going to have to be his faith in a few months' time.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that was like funny, but this was way too, like, oh God, I hated that lockdown came in.
To be honest, I was a little bit surprised it came in, but then, I mean, if that's the timeline and this book was probably finished during that, I was like, okay, I can kind of accept it.
Yeah, I just not hate my that favorite. Lockdown is in. I hate that this horrible pandemic is now going to be written.
It's so
fiction.
Ubiquitous that we can't avoid it in literature. I had that moment today, actually. Becca, no, you're not a fan of, but I finished Leonard and Hungry Paul today. And there was just this moment in it was in like the last chapter or two, I think, when Leonard references the work from home illustrators, and I would
don't do it.
I forgot, you know, that work from home was like a concept before the pandemic. I actually like stopped and was like,
Oh, it's so, I think what it is I remember growing up as a kid and being like fascinated with the horrible history plague books, and then being fascinated with The Stand by Stephen King. And I was obsessed with, what's that really horrible movie that it's, I just love it so much. Oh my God, it's got Matt Damon in it. And
Contagion.
I was obsessed with this. This was a whole fiction thing for me, in a universe of like, this was.
And then you have to live through it, and then you change your mind.
Yeah, but no, but not that I loved. Not that I obviously. It was just so fiction, and I could escape and kind of go, oh my God, this is like what this world would be like. And I hate how close we got to it, basically.
Yeah.
And it's kind of traumatizing now. I can read The Stand because it's not. It doesn't say the words that have become in our, like, social distancing isn't mentioned, thank yeah. God, because
the thing is, though,
beforehand, but it's when you see the like buzzwords that got like plagued on social media, like stay at home, like distance, stay apart, love from afar, all this shit, like, and I see it in a book and I'm like,
oh, it's too real.
Nikki, like, we're going to be seeing that more often from now on, because so many writers are going to be releasing books that they've written in lockdown.
And that's why I was so torn at the end of this book. I kind of realized, like, oh, we're in a new time in fiction. Yeah. And now any contemporary fiction is going to mention why I got so into contemporary fiction in the first place, because I wanted to forget about the pandemic.
So I love how we're going so much on about lockdowns and that. And we hate it. And we're probably doing that to our listeners right now. Mean.
It's just that was my biggest gripe with this book. Yeah. Honest to God. It was that moment. I was like, I have an issue with this book now. I didn't actually have many issues before. The ending ruined it.
I have a question related. Well, maybe it's only related for me, but what was your favorite part of the book?
Oh,
I would say the email where Alice talks about being an author and the celebrity and all that. Definitely for me.
Okay. What about you, Nikki?
I think that was the first thing I loved, but I also really did love Felix and Alice talking about why they think they're horrible people, like why they think they're bad. That chapter just was, I loved that chapter. I just thought it was really stunning.
Mm. Both of those really hit home for me, because I totally agree with you. But one bit that like has stayed with me so much, and it's not even like a pivotal moment in the book really, but it's when it's like the quietness of when they're like cooking dinner, and like there's just a kind of like gentle hum of like people around the place, and just the way she describes, like, you know, the leaves left at the bottom of the bowl kind of like black and oily, and just like you can hear their conversation and there's just so much warmth in it. And yeah, I just adore that passage.
Actually, that's, I had that part marked here because there was one line. It's basically that they're all kind of tethered together in time. Here it is. To think of Alice living here alone or not alone. She was standing at the countertop then, serving the crumble out into bowls with a spoon. Everything in one place, all of life knotted in this house for one night, like a necklace knotted at the bottom of a drawer.
Yeah, it's,
that was, you're actually right. That is the best.
I just thought that like chapter was really, really magic and just really warm. And I know it all like unfurls very shortly after, but it's just really, really beautiful. And that's what it kind of like put a point on what I think is so special about Sally Rooney, that like you may not like her characters, you may not like the subject matter all the time, but like, God, she's a beautiful author.
Oh, she
writes about life so well.
And just... Oh, it's just, her writing is just beautiful. And like literally that can all be embodied for me when she's talking about the oily leaves at the bottom of the salad bowl. I'm like, that is just magic.
I know. Oh, that you're dead right. That's, I changed my mind. That's also my answer now.
Because I changed my mind because your bit is my favorite.
will we finish up with whether we like the book or not?
Okay.
Okay.
Chloe is first.
Yeah, it was a slow burn for me, but once I got past the halfway point, I really fell in love with it. Like a lot of it like made me teary, a lot of it made me very reflective. It was tough going. I was really close to giving up in the first half, but yeah, I loved it.
Now, it's interesting because I think I lost love in the middle of this book, not in the beginning. I was good for the beginning. I was good for the end. The middle lost me a bit, and I found it hard to work through this book. It was
what point kind of is the middle again? Remind me. Is there anything specific, or it just drags?
It just drags because I
kind of when Eileen and Simon start getting together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Right, it's kind of after Felix and Alice have that chat, that one I kept bringing up when he's saying she's being the bigger person. So with this book, I adored certain chapters of this were the best thing I've ever read. And I had more feelings on this book than I think I've ever had on a book before, both negative and positive. But I think that just means like that it just made it really clear to me that like I think this was one of the most special books I've ever read, and I think like I did love it.
And I find it very difficult, like you said there, like I have so many mixed feelings on it, it would be very hard for me to give it a star rating.
Yeah,
I don't think I could.
But I think, to be honest, it's if I like or I love or I whatever this book, I think like I deeply love this. Like I feel extremely, extremely like heavy love for this book, but I have a lot of issues with it all the same. But I do think like it's one of, I'm gonna remember reading this for like all time, I would say. And I'm definitely gonna reread it in the future.
Becca, I'm so intrigued. Did you like this book?
I did like this book, and I have to say that I think I preferred quite a lot of it to Conversations with Friends, just because, and that could be controversial with people, just because I preferred that there was more emotional maturity. Maybe it's because at the stage of where I am in life, I prefer reading about that. Maybe it could be that I've read quite a lot of books about coming of age during the year, that I just feel a bit jaded with that sometimes.
Yeah.
And I preferred that. Now, I will say that there were points in the book. I mean, I will never, ever want to read those sections about the Bronze Age again. that I really kind of was like, I really questioned whether I was like, can I keep going? Because I was like, these bits are just beyond me, do you know? And
I am just a big silly trying to read a book about people.
But I mean, what really kept me going was that the way she writes, really, because I mean, the characters, apart from Simon, I like Simon. Other than that, I, you know, mixed feelings about the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
It is really her style of writing is just, it really just pulls you through.
Yeah.
And it can be really magical at times how she just phrases something or like her observations about something.
That's the thing. But like the problem with her books has never ever, like her as a writer has never come into question. Like I really didn't like Normal People at all, but like I still can't fault that it's an excellently written
like
book,
you know? You can't not enjoy reading it, but you can leave it with a lot of problems on what happened.
Exactly.
Like I think she really is one of the best writers like you could read.
So I mean, we're probably going to end it around here because it's getting late. But I'm sure we could probably discuss quite a lot more on this book.
It's kind of a never ending trap.
It is, because I mean, like there's so much in it. I for me, it lived up to the hype.
I think it's her best book to date.
Yeah, 100%.
I agree. And I remember having a conversation with someone on Instagram after I read it. And they're like, oh, give me all the thoughts. And they didn't like it. I was like, I actually thought it was her best book.
That's so the thing. I've seen a lot of people like who read widely and are Sally Rooney fans really didn't like it. And I guess I can see why, but I just don't agree.
And the thing is, though, that is our opinions.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But like when you have a book this, it's just the weirdest feeling. I don't think there's any other, because one of the questions that we were kind of looking at, Becca, on that when we were deciding questions to ask each other was like, would you compare this to another book? And I know we did, like throughout this, we compared it to a lot of Sally Rooney. I even compared it to Stephen King for some reason. But with this one, after reading it, I can't compare my feelings on this book to any other book. Like, it's in my favorites, but it's
like a complicated so fave.
Very yeah. complicated, but like ultimate favorites, it's there. Yeah, yeah. Amazing.
It's just she really gets you thinking afterwards, yeah. and you will be pondering that book for a really long time. So I will have to read the final one of the Sally Rooney books out so far, Normal People, soon. Haven't read that one.
Girl!
Yet. Yeah,
I'm so shocked by this. This is so out of character.
And it's really interesting as well, because like I liked both Normal People and Conversations with Friends. Chloe only liked Conversations with Friends. And I think you like that book more than I do. I think that's like,
I think it's because really I read it first. Yeah. I read it first. There was no, like, not to be all like, I mean, it wasn't cool, but like there was no hype in Sally Rooney then. So I went in with no expectations.
Yeah, I read it because
it was so fresh. Like, but that would have been kind of like once Sally Rooney had like a lot of hype surrounding her name. I think, was it? I can't remember. It was before Normal People came out.
I read
out.
It right before Normal People came out.
Yeah, so and there was good buzz for Normal People. Yeah. But like this, the buzz around this is incomparable to anything except Harry Potter.
The Harry Potter book, yeah.
But I think we're going to end it here.
Wrap it up with a little bow.
Yeah, so we hope you enjoyed our third ever book club episode and our first ever Sally Rooney dedicated episode, and we would love to hear your thoughts on this, because I think it's one that is dividing a lot of people from what we've seen online, but as well,
united we stand, folks.
We do this ask though, please be respectful, because I've seen a lot of arguments online about this book, and
no, you don't need to like the same things.
You don't need to like the same things.
Totally fine. But be like Simon, don't shove it down people's throats.
It's other people's opinion. So we hope you enjoyed. Do chat with us about it.
I'm going to mention before I go that this is probably going to be my last episode for a while. Like, I know now I am the prodigal podcast host. I've been drifting in and out. But yeah, no, hopefully I will always be this podcast's number one fan. But I might drift in and out for the occasional episode. And
for the next Sally Rooney.
For the next Sally Rooney, maybe even before that. But so this is my salutation for now. So
that's honey.
What? A salutation. I didn't even talk
We love you, Chloe.
We do love you, Chloe. Till next time. Bye.
Bye, my lover.
Bye, my friend. You have been the one.
Cue outro.
Nikki Sill singing. We're going to stop it now.
Goodbye, my lover.